Hi everyone, I'm Pinakin Munshi and we are covering the legal aspects in supply chain management. We will cover now global supply chain management and World Trade Organization, that is WTO. We will briefly cover in this chapter the supply chain types and challenges, importance of global free trade, need for change in global supply chain management, GATT and WTO, and WTO agreements. So supply chain types and challenges. Every company is different, for its raw materials and what all components required. And so every company has to face different challenges. Even when you look at in the automotive segment, although you may find that the basic processes are common, there are still differences between them depending upon the number of components they are able to source locally and number of components which they need to bring from other countries or from the principal plants. Different types of companies have to face different challenges depending on the company size, nature of operations, selection and location of the suppliers. Larger the companies, more is the complexity. Generally, small companies may be restricted to their purchase and sale activities within the same country, but for large corporations, they have global operations and they may have the low-cost manufacturing base, whereas the supply may be all across the world. So the main challenges are managing the inventory, because you have the raw material inventories, you have the goods in process, and of course you have the finished goods, and you would like to keep this inventory as low as possible, and you would like to keep it as close to the market as possible so that you can quickly supply this materials to the market. So basically what you're looking for is flexibility and agility of the supply chains. Shifting of the products across the border, anything that can be done to reduce the cost or improve the delivery times, improve the efficiencies, it would help the companies become more competitive. There is always a trade-off, because if you keep the goods in the country, you have to sell them within the same country. So the whole purpose is you try and keep it as close to the markets. At the same time, you do not restrict it to one particular country so that it can be supplied to any country within the region. So what are the challenges typically companies face in a global supply chain? The role of transportation. Transportation, as we have seen in the past, is taking the maximum amount of time, because when you are talking of global supplies, you are talking of long distances, maybe halfway across the world. So your lead times, your service quality, your speed of responding to the market will depend upon what is the mode of transport that you are using, and what also that decides what is your cost of transportation, depending upon whether you choose to transport it by air, by rail, road or ship. Innovation is another thing which global supply chain needs to use extensively to reduce their cost. Innovation like clustering of the suppliers in one place, which is a very common practice if you look at in terms of automotive industry. You have the ancillary industries for automobile manufacturer spread around it, which means that materials are coming from within few kilometers of the plant. That makes the system more responsive. The uncertainty of supplies can be reduced, and you don't need to hold inventories. Also, changing government policies, this is a challenge, because constantly the industry has to adapt or counter any negative impact of the changing government policies. So what is the importance of global free trade? So many MNC giants are constantly struggling to have ability to source, ship and sell products in the most efficient locations, and to do this seamlessly. So we talked about having production centers in the the low-cost countries which have cheap labor, which have availability of the raw materials, they have access to the necessary resources, and they would like to sell the products to the consuming countries. And they would like to do this with a minimum of hassles, because whenever you are talking of trade across countries, there are a lot of legislations, regulations, acts which come into the play. So this is one of the important aspects as far as the global free trade is concerned. Onshore services such as distribution, wholesaling and retailing have become principal source of value and growth. We are all aware, you know, that distribution, sales, marketing, this is the core activity which basically generates revenue for a company. Further to the importance of global free trade, one needs to manage the sustainability and integrity of the supply chains, which is supposed to be an important factor in the success of the companies. New techniques of future global trade, so with the advances in the IT technology, etc., advances in the ERP system, one needs to constantly make use of the new technologies to speed up the process, to improve the efficiencies, to reduce the time to the market, reduce the development times, manufacture in Asia to sell in Asia. These are just the near-shoring capabilities that are important to a business. So if you are making a product close to the market, again your systems are more agile, you land up with less amount of stock, you are spending less amount of money on transportation. So you are also managing your cost. So nearshoring, the examples we have always taken is manufacturing in Mexico, which is a low cost production base because of cheap labor, etc., for the US market, which are a very high cost market. So you have the market and the manufacturing base which are very close to each other. So that way you can reduce a lot of uncertainty and assure a better quality of services. So manufacturers to order, that is very flexible and rapid supply chain, because that is the key success factor as far as the new age industries are concerned, where you want the system to be pulled by the customer demand. You do not hold inventories, you do not have forecasts, you are actually trying to follow the customer demand and trying to fulfill the customer requirement by actually making the product as per customer requirement. Adding value close to the customer, that is the final assembly and finishing close to the market. We have seen this in many automotive industries. Initially, Japan used to produce the cars in Japan and ship them to the US. Subsequently, due to certain economic factors and also the necessity to respond very quickly to their markets, they shifted the production base to USA, and likewise they have done in European and Asian countries. So today they may have only a few critical components which come from Japan, otherwise the components are sourced from nearby countries, and you are actually assembling and finishing the product close to the market, so that the delivery is immediate and the inventories that the company is required to hold are very, very low. So what is the changing landscape of the business? I mean, how the business is changing? One is the adoption and commercialization of the broadband. As we have seen that the internet has become extremely fast. It has become very helpful. We are talking of Internet of Things, where various portals offer services. You don't need to have any servers kept at your end. You can keep all your data, all your systems on the clouds, etc. So this is a major change which is happening, which has impacted the industry as well. Innovation in media and e-commerce has really transformed the way transactions have been done. With it has come very high expectations in terms of cost, because e-commerce is linked with quick deliveries, extremely efficient agile supply chain or logistics systems, and at a very low cost. Increased market transparency, we have seen in some of the earlier chapters that today, because of the internet, there is transparency, there are portals where customers can compare various products on specifications, on price. So the buyers are much more better informed. There is extreme transparency as far as the markets are concerned. Deconstruction of integrated value chain. So the integrated value chains are also undergoing a change, and a lot of innovation is coming into the integrated value chains. So the traditional value chains are giving way to even more efficient, more agile supply chain networks. Discontinuity in consumer aspirations and use of technology. Discontinuity because the rate of obsolescence is very, very high. A technology which is introduced today may be considered a cutting edge. It becomes a commodity, it becomes a standard feature within no time, and always there are new suppliers coming out with new features, new innovations. So, and people are also very quick to adapt to technologies. You have seen that with the mobile apps, where new apps are coming every day, which is catering to every aspect of the business. I mean, you even buy a car, there is an app which connects you to the portal with the car manufacturer, and you can even track your servicing of the car, what is the kind of cost you have incurred. So this kind of technology has been accessible to the consumers or the customers, which was not the case before. China becoming a vibrant domestic market. China was always initially considered to be a communist and a socialist country. They were not being considered as a big market. The joke was that most of the Chinese used to travel by bicycles. They used to wear only two or three colored clothes. Today, if you see, it's one of the biggest consumer in the world, and they are also some of the biggest spenders. So they have become a very vibrant domestic market, and India also is a very vibrant domestic market. We always talk about a recession in the marketplace, and let me tell you, only those industries which are dependent on exports are the ones affected during a global recession. Companies which are manufacturing or producing goods for the local market, for the Indian markets, are generally doing very well because of a very vibrant domestic market, which is always supporting the manufacturers, which means that you do not feel the recession there. So these are some of the changes which are happening in the business landscape. So what are the need for changes in the global supply chain? Innovation is a key element of successful response to the changing business landscape, and research has highlighted critical success factors for innovation initiatives. E-commerce was one innovation. The apps, etc., that I am talking of are also innovations. The various portals which have come out, which offer you products along with the price, features, services. So, and this is not an extensive list that we are describing, but there are so many other innovations coming out in terms of industry. Today you have gadgets, device, which can be controlled from hundreds of kilometers away through the internet. So people claim that you can even control your air conditioners or oven or some of the domestic devices while you are away from home through the internet. So the need is also to experiment inexpensively and often. In a very fast changing and a very innovative landscape, you need to always come out with new ideas. And new ideas means that the ideas need to be tested, need to be tried out. And that is where the need for experimentation arises. You need to inexpensively experiment, which means that you may try out the experiment on a small segment of the market with one product line or so to test or check out your concepts before they can be implemented on a wider scale. Prototype early, we have already discussed about, you know, the product development and the speed of obsolescence, the speed with which innovations are coming in the market, which means that competitions have a very tough job of developing an equivalent product or a better product in the shortest possible time and placing it in the market, else they will be out of the business. Classic example is Apple. Every time they come out with an iPhone, you will find that within a couple of weeks or probably a month, the competition start coming out with similar devices which are equally powerful and maybe have similar or some better features as compared to that. So early prototyping is also towards faster innovations to the market. Empower managers 2 to 3 levels from the top to approve and fund the experiment. Traditional organizations always held the authority, the power at the senior most level. Today's fast changing time requires empowerment of the people at lower levels, and in certain aspects empowering people right up to the bottom most level, because this is the way you can drive an agile organization, not an organization where you need to seek permissions upwards and then the approval come from top to the down level. So people need to be empowered so that you have quick decisions coming. Also, one must learn to accept and expect failures, because when you are experimenting, it's not that every concept, every innovation will work, but this has to be taken as part of the spirit, and one must not be deterred from failures. On the contrary, failures are a means to a learning. Involve the customers, because ultimately whatever you develop, the product you develop, the service you develop is for the customers, and unless the customers are involved, unless you know what they want, your innovation will not be useful. So we need to learn to involve the customers right from the early stages. Use social networks to encourage and reward sharing. Whether you like it or not, today social networks are being used for airing complaints, airing reviews. In the good old days, the reviews were only given by a few experts. So if a new device comes into the market, some expert would write about the device and the rest of the people will read the review. Today, every purchase on an e-commerce site, the person can go and post a review. So today, you have thousands of people who are posting reviews on the social network site. So it's extremely important to manage the social networks to both further your products, encourage the people, at the same time to learn from the mistakes and address any complaints or redress any disputes which may be there with the consumer. Create much more value from existing assets. Companies are under tremendous stress. You cannot have unlimited resources, which means that from limited resources, limited assets, you need to create much more. And this is where, initiatives like Lean Six Sigma, theory of constraints, they come into picture, because the focus is to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of your operations, to improve the quality of your operations so that you can produce much more from the same facilities. Establish mechanism for internalizing new technology. New technologies are coming very, very fast. We talked about the mobile phones. In mobile phones, every day there is something new coming. We used to earlier have phones which only supported 2G. Then we had phones which supported 3G. Today we have phones supporting 4G. They come with Gorilla Glass. They come with some advanced features, NFC. So you also need technologies, newer technologies in the manufacturing, and to accept these technologies, internalize them, you require a mechanism so that in the shortest possible time, the technology can be implemented and you can start milking the benefit from this new technology and show the payoff in practical terms. So the payoff may not be shown only on paper. They have to translate into better products, cheaper products, more efficient or more effective products. GATT and WTO. So the General Agreement on Trade in Services, that is GATTs. This is the first multilateral agreement under the auspices of Uruguay Round, which provided developing countries with an opportunity to integrate into the global economy through adopting liberal policies with regard to trade in services, and then subsequently it was turned into GATT. So the developing countries still provide skilled labor, and there is a very large demand for this services in the developed world. So GATT is providing a platform for this working together between the developing and the developed worlds. World Trade Organization. So WTO, which has more than 160 member countries. So they are located in Geneva, and it administers the WTO trade agreements. It is a forum for trade negotiation, and it handles the trade disputes, monitors national trade policies. It offers technical assistance and training for developing countries in cooperation with other international organizations. So basically what they are doing is WTO is trying to get the countries across the world to work together, lower the barriers, and allow for free trade between the countries across the world. So at WTO, the Goods Council, Services Council, and the Intellectual Property Council, they report to the General Council for major reforms. Numerous specialized committees working on groups and working parties deal with the individual agreement. This is more to do with the structure of the WTO and the various councils under it. GATT and the WTO have helped to create a strong and prosperous trading system, contributing to unprecedented growth. How they have been helping is because you have large markets and you have the countries which have got a very strong skill base, very strong resource base, or a very strong labor base. So WTO is bringing these together, by which it's a win-win kind of a situation where all the countries which trade benefit from this. WTO agreements. The WTO's rules, the agreements, are a result of negotiation between the members. So, you know, a lot of treaties or agreements which happen between the nations are as a result of these agreements. Through this agreement, WTO members operate a non-discriminatory trading system that spells out their rights and their obligation. And GATT is now the WTO's principal rule book for trade in goods. So further trade in goods, it all began with the trade in goods from 1947 to 1994. GATT was the forum for negotiating lower custom duty rates and other trade barriers. Since 1995, the updated GATT has become the WTO's umbrella agreement for trade in goods. You will recall that India also is part of WTO, and we had very high trade barriers. If you see, we had extremely high custom duties, which actually made imports prohibitively costly. So since we became part of the WTO and the GATT agreement, we were by virtue of the membership forced to reduce some of the trade barriers, which is how the import duty etc. have come down, and which has given access to us of, you know, world class products. I remember today you have all these imported cars which are available here, but back in before the liberalization, we only had two or three cars. So we used to have an Ambassador or a Premier, which was earlier known as Fiat. And of course, there was a car called a Standard or Standard Herald. So there were just two, three cars to choose from. The technology was outdated, it was obsolete. But because these cars were selling without any upgradation, the companies never bothered to upgrade them. The cost of the cars were also very, very high. So through these initiatives, WTO agreements and initiatives, the countries have benefited in terms of the international trade, in terms of services, banking, insurance, telephone, IT, etc. services. The trade have been benefited by adopting the WTO principles, and these principles appear in the new General Agreement on Trade in Services. You must have seen today, you have so many foreign banks, you have got the foreign insurance companies which are operating in collaboration. Even in the telephony section, that means you are talking of mobile telephones, there are so many global companies like Vodafone, etc., which are operating. And even when you travel abroad, most of these companies have a tie-up with the global giants, which means seamlessly you can operate. The service provider in India, with his connection, you can move abroad and continue to use your services. So these are all the result of the WTO agreement and the service agreements which WTO provides. Coming to intellectual property, the WTO's intellectual property agreement amounts to the rules for trade and investment in ideas and creativity. So trade secrets, that is intellectual property, is always protected by WTO. We also, in the chapter on intellectual property, talked about how in India we always had a process patent and never a product patent, which meant some of the local players could actually copy a product by making it through a different process and claim that it did not violate the patent. So WTO has now forced the countries, all countries across the world, to accept the product patent, and likewise in all other intellectual property areas, they have got the people to accept the global standards in protection of intellectual property. So members of WTO are protected that their intellectual property will not be taken for a ride, and that their interest will be protected. Dispute settlement. So WTO's procedure for solving the trade quarrels under the settlement of understanding is also another critical function that they perform to basically resolve issues between countries who may have a dispute. Trade policy review. The trade policy review mechanism, the purpose is to improve transparency, to create a greater understanding of the policies, you know, of that country, the countries that they are adopting, and to assess their impact. So all WTO members must undergo a periodic scrutiny. and a review containing the reports by the country concerned and the WTO secretariat. What we exactly mean by this is the policies which are laid down by WTO, they are constantly auditing it to make sure that countries do not violate these policies by some covert means. So for example, you know, one of the requirement of WTO is to reduce the trade barriers in by way of custom duty, etc. So it should not so happen that countries, while reducing the custom duty, are increasing some of the barriers indirectly, thus posing a barrier to import of goods. We have already seen that in the central excise, when we talked about, we do have certain additional duties, taxes, cesses, which try to do this, but the effort of WTO is to see that these are kept to a minimum, and there is maximum transparency maintained by the countries, and the policies are in line with the WTO's trade agreement. So, developing countries, development and trade. So, over 3/4 of WTO members are developing or least developed countries. You can see that this is a vast majority. So, only a quarter of the representation is from the developed world. WTO Committee on Trade and Development takes care of this activity. Its responsibility includes implementation of the agreements. So, whatever are the agreements which are reached by WTO, the implementation of these agreements is also responsibility which is monitored by WTO. They have technical cooperations and increased participation of developing countries in the global trading system. So, it's basically opening of the economies also of the developing countries, giving them access to the developed economies, as I said, to try and give a win-win situation. Technical assistance and training. So, the WTO organizes hundreds of technical cooperation missions to developing countries. Annually, it holds an average of 3 trade policy courses each year in Geneva for government officials. So, basically, government officials who are making the policies, who are monitoring the policies, they need to be educated on the technical aspects, the cooperation aspects, compliance aspects, and this task is taken care of by the trading which is conducted by WTO. WTO has set up reference centers in over 100 trade ministries and regional organizations in capitals of developing and least developed countries, and continuous training programs for development and underdeveloped countries are being arranged. So, they are trying to constantly open up opportunities in the underdeveloped countries, give them access, give them benefit of upgradation of technology and the opportunity to supply to the developed nations where the major markets exist. So, with that, we come to the end of WTO. Thank you.